Welcome to the Quintessential Podcast, and thanks to our new title sponsor, Spire Academy Lacrosse. Spire is an international high school and post-grad sports performance training and education boarding school located within a world-class event and wellness complex. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Quintessential Podcast. I'm Quinn Kesnick. This is our first podcast of the month of April, which right now in the Mid-Atlantic region is just covered with rain, but hopefully we'll get through this and then it'll feel like spring again. Things are heating up. We got four more weeks of the regular season and then championship week, May 2nd through May 5th. Selection show for the NCAA tournament is on Sunday, May 5th. Last week, I covered a women's game on Wednesday, play-by-play, live from home, Xavier and Louisville. I thought Louisville ran some incredibly effective half-field patterns, which was able to create some space for their very speedy Dodgers, a pair of sisters, Kokoro and the guy Nakazawa, who are from Japan. These are two athletes who were spotted by Coach Teeter of Louisville playing for the Japanese U19 team. And now they're at Louisville playing in American college and doing extremely well. They're extremely skilled, really fast, excellent players. And so I think this is a trend that is going to grow as the PLL continues to go over to Japan. I was there back in 1990. That's a long time ago. But we laid down the foundation and the seeds thanks to guys like Russ Jones, Don Zimmerman, and Bob Scott. Hopkins developed a relationship and started Japanese lacrosse, the JLA. And then our team went over in 89. I went over in 90 with Coach Zimmerman for 2 weeks. Stayed up in Kyoto for a week by myself, coaching lacrosse two or three times a day with a translator. And then we go out at night, and I would drink the translator under the table. By the end of the week, they had multiple translators coming to dinner with me, usually three, to try to keep up. But what an amazing trip. I hope to go back to Japan someday soon. Saturday, I was covering a game from South Bend, Indiana. And the crowds that Notre Dame, they're pulling in now, over 5,000. I've never seen the grassy knoll so crowded. I mean, it was wall-to-wall green. You had some gold. You had some blue. I thought Notre Dame played in spurts. You know, there were times in the game where they looked dominant, and then I thought they let Syracuse crawl back in it, quite honestly. I thought their second half, their defense got tired. I thought they were sloppy. The positives were Liam Entman continues to play over the last 2 weeks like a first-team All-American goaltender. You know, the hustle save, the dive save gets a lot of social media acclaim. And that's a save, quite honestly, that every goalie who picks up a stick from age 7 until he graduates college and plays in the pros can try. Look, when you're beat post to post, you got one chance, and that's to dive. If you half-ass it and don't move your feet and don't try, you'll never make that save. So my guess is that Liam has done that move maybe 20 times in his career, and he finally made one save. And that's 5%. And that's not a bad save percentage on that shot. But it just shows you, you know, the difference between good and great is usually one save per game. So positives for Notre Dame were, I thought Pat Cavanaugh was outstanding in the fact that Chris Wojcik has him now attacking the goal from up top, from each of the wings, and from behind the net. So it's not just like Pat just drives up left-handed and tries to curl around the goal. I thought the first midfield didn't get as many runs as you'd expect. I was really shocked at the amount of runs that Riley Gray, Will Angrick, and Max Busenkill got. Riley Gray scored two goals unassisted early. Will Angrick also got on the board later. But this was a game really where you got the feeling that Kevin Corrigan was going to roll that second midfield out there. Jordan Faison, who's been double-dipping with spring football, and keep in mind that Notre Dame has a new offensive coordinator for their football team. So Jordan's in meetings now to try to stay up to date with the terminology so that when he shows up in June for camp, he knows where to go. He knows the terminology with this new OC. He knows the route tree. And so that's going to be a little taxing on him, I think, in the month of April. And then I think he can bust through it in May. But Jordan scored a single goal in every game this season. Devin McClain was a little quiet in this game because Syracuse wasn't sliding very much. And then I thought Eric Dobson, you know, even though his numbers weren't robust, I thought he played a strong game. I thought he handled the ball well. He didn't make any bad decisions. I thought his shooting was on target. I thought he played a really smart game. I was impressed with his maturity and his ability to let this game come to him. We turn things forward this weekend. I've got two games, Penn State and Hopkins on Saturday. That's a 2 o'clock game. I'm with Chris Cotter. I believe we're on ESPNU live. That's a 2 o'clock, yeah. Before us is Virginia, North Carolina, and Clark and Anish have that game. I believe that game's also on ESPNU. That's Saturday, April 6th. Johns Hopkins, well, they continue to win. You know, they didn't face off well against Michigan last week, but Logan Callahan came in and he straightened that out. Russell Melendez has perked up the last 2 weeks. The attack was extremely productive, and that's what's going to happen when you're playing against Michigan's close defense because they just continue to struggle with picks. I thought it was notable that Casey McDermott, who'd been kind of a two-way winger on faceoffs, is now playing a little more offense. Don't know what that means. And Chase Erland has been unbelievable between the posts. The way Hopkins is playing, they're sliding. They are an aggressive sliding team. They are sending double teams and then rotating behind it. They're giving up shots, but the shots they're giving up have been within the wheelhouse, and Chase has been really good. So they'll play Penn State on Saturday. The Nittany Lions, man, if you watch that game on BTN, as I did on Sunday night, they looked like they had that thing home, and it was clinched. And Maryland went on just a massive early fourth quarter run, fueled by faceoffs and poor Penn State transition defense. So if you're Penn State, you know, you saw the good in the first half. This is a team that can play their way into championship weekend. I don't think there's any doubt. Jeff Tamburoni's been there, done that. I like their patterns on offense. I thought John Hawes, their OC, dialed up some good stuff. TJ Malone was handling, but he wasn't dominating ball possessions. He was very effective running off of picks at X and then from the high wing area. But the cast of characters, I was just a little more impressed than I thought that I would be. I had watched their game last week, and I liked what I saw. But, you know, Luke Wahlstrom, Matt Traynor, Will Peden, Matt Costin, Jake Morin, a lot of these guys are names that we heard last year when this team played in the semifinals and should have won. Plus, you got a freshman now in Kyle Lehman who's doing a nice job coming out of the box. I think he's ultimately an attackman, but he's playing midfield. Where Penn State needs to improve, probably middle of the field stuff. Face-off losses into Maryland transition were deadly. The Terps just got it going off of face-offs. Penn State made some bad face-off sub decisions, gave up some 5-on-4s, and I looked down the list of the Maryland goals, and like they scored 3 or 4 goals because of poor transition defense. And I think that rattled Penn State's close defense. Again, they're playing without Kevin Parham. They're playing without Jack Posey. And Alex Ross, like, is the go-to guy now. He's only a sophomore from Spalding. Joe Scarfey's a transfer from St. Lawrence. And I think they lost their wits a little bit, and they end up going to a zone defense, down 1 or 2 late. It just gave Maryland some comfort. And by then, Maryland had caught fire. Just a crazy game. Jack Frassion was beyond amazing. Honestly, I've never seen a goalie make the kind of saves he makes. I mean, he's catching the ball between his feet, okay? The guy makes more chicken wing saves, more leg saves, more thigh saves, more shin saves, more knee saves, more foot saves, more toe saves, another kick save. It's unbelievable. Jack Frassion, he reminds me, he's so light on his feet. He reminds me of a guy like, I use the term the matador. If you've ever seen bullfighting in person, those guys are sinewy, they're sleek, and their body control is amazing. That's what Frassion reminds me of. He's got the quick hands for stuff up top, but the flexibility and that body control and being light on his feet for the shots down low, man, he is pretty darn good. And so they'll come to Homewood. It's homecoming. It's interesting they're having homecoming here for this week, but not for the Maryland game on the 20th. But anyway, they'll celebrate championships from, get this, 1924, 1934, 1974, 1984. So always a cast of thousands. It's true homecoming. Okay, this is not just like a lacrosse thing. Johns Hopkins University has their homecoming for a lacrosse game. Okay, no other school in the country does that. And it's pretty cool. You know, you're playing homecoming games. I remember walking out, and the demographic it's a little older, quite honestly, but they know their lacrosse. I remember my first play in a homecoming game when I was a freshman was just a routine clear up the right side, a little lob pass over the midfield line, and the crowd cheered. And I was like, wow, these people really know lacrosse. They're cheering a basic clear. I'm like, how cool is that? I like this. I like this audience. I can deal with this. If I'm going to get applauded for making the right pass on a clear, wow, this is going to be great. So that was my first. That was my first homecoming and lasting homecoming experience. Sunday, I'll take a flight down to Raleigh-Durham, and Sunday, Kark Anish, who's back from like baseball and who knows what, and I will be in Durham live, ACC Network championship rematch. We got Duke and Notre Dame, and I think the game is at noon. Yes, it is. It's at noon, ACC Network. Well, a couple things that stand out here. Watching Duke recently, their offensive production has slumped a bit recently. When you look at their last, I don't know, four games or so, they were averaging a zillion goals a game. And then all of a sudden, they beat Richmond 12-3. They lose to Syracuse, only scoring four. They beat Denver 11-7. They beat BU in the mud 11-10. Now, two of those games, granted, weren't being played. Actually, their Penn loss was also in the mud. But their goals per game went down to like 18, down to 15. And in the last four games, they're not exactly tearing it up on offense. Okay, they're facing off well. Their clearing percentage is a little less than their opponents. And that has, you know, that was really costly in the Penn game. But what I see, what I'm seeing is an offense, supremely talented attack, okay? I don't think there's any doubt there. O'Neal, Dyson Williams, Josh Sawada. Josh Sawada's got 31 assists and 21 goals, okay? The one thing that stands out about this attack is Dyson Williams, 30-2. And if you watched last summer when Dyson Williams was playing for Team Canada, he was carrying the ball behind the net. He was an ISO guy. He was a passer. It seems like in this Duke offense that he's compartmentalized, marginalized, as just a goal scorer on the inside. But what stands out, two things offensively for Duke, and we'll see how this develops. Again, we have 2 months left in the season. The midfield, are they set now? Are we going to see Andrew McAdory, Max Sloat, and Ben Johnston? Or is this a constant audition week to week? Are we going to see Balsamo and Denenza and Papendick and Schlusser and Landon running first midfield? Or are those lines finally solidified? Okay, two. Ben Johnston's a really good player, by the way. Freshman from Illinois via Avon, 16 goals. He's a beast. Left-handed shot from the outside. He can get to the rack. Really impressive. But the one thing I'm not seeing recently from Duke, multiple pass goals. Okay, Zawada and O'Neal have 52 of the team's 98 assists. That's two guys accounting for more than half. I'm not sure some of these midfielders can really pass off the dodge. And if you plug in the tape and you chart it, you're seeing ISO goals. You're seeing ISO one-pass goals. That is, let's say O'Neal drives up, throws it to Dyson, Dyson scores. Zawada drives up, throws it to Dyson, Dyson scores. McAdory goes to the net, throws it inside to Dyson, Dyson scores. But we're not seeing multiple pass goals. Okay, that is dodge, pass, pass across the top, one more down the side, layup. We're not seeing east to west ball transformation. We're not seeing the ball go north, south as much. We're just not seeing multiple, that is more than two pass goals that I saw, let's say last night when you watch Cornell play. That ball's ding, 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 goal. The Cornell offense was humming. So it'll be interesting. Duke hosting Notre Dame. Great series. Could be one of three potential matchups between these two. I don't know. We'll see. I got Notre Dame as a clear number one. I got a tweet the other day that said, oh, yeah, it's hard to separate, differentiate Virginia and Notre Dame. I don't see it that way. You plug in the tape. Notre Dame, based on what they did against Michigan, 60 minutes, based on what they did for about 30 minutes over Syracuse, to me, clearly the number one team in the country. Virginia's got major face-off issues. Virginia's second midfield is missing in action. There is nothing there right now. And then offense is a little funky. I think they'll break out, quite honestly. I think they'll break out as they play North Carolina on Saturday. But I just think Notre Dame is a clear-cut number one. We're going to bring in Ryan Poley from BU right now, and BU is on a little bit of a run, 7-3 overall. They're 4-1 in the Patriot League, and the theme in this month of April for the fans is going to be league championships. Okay, we got 4 weeks of league play. The goal right now is for everybody. You just got to make your league tournament. All right, the 76 teams in Division I, you got to make your tournament, and then you stay in the hunt, and then from there, the tournament brackets out. You know, it's a 16 or 17 or 18 team NCAA tournament. But we've got other weeks of elimination lacrosse. You know, the semifinals of each league, in a lot of cases, that is desperation lacrosse. You win, you advance. You lose, your season's over. And that's a shame to not play any games in May. But and the same goes for a lot of those conference finals. I think there are 9 AQs going to be handed out this season. And so in April, I want to track, I want this podcast to be about some of those league races. And this week we start from Boston with Ryan Poley. Today's episode is brought to you in partnership with Spire Lacrosse. Spire's world-class high school and post-grad lacrosse programs are ideal for serious lacrosse players looking for an intense training environment to prepare for the next level of competition. The academies provide student-athletes the chance to study, train, and compete in world-class athletic and academic facilities while seeking the best possible college scholarship opportunities. Quintessential Podcast welcomes in from Boston, head coach of the BU Terriers, Ryan Poley. Ryan, I got to tell you, I am reading a book right now called The Revolutionary. It's about Sam Adams. It's actually right here on the other side of my phone. It was a gift written by Stacey Schiff. The vocabulary is off the charts, so I got to read it really slow. But it just hits me again. Like, Boston has so much incredible history. Like, this is pre-Revolutionary War. It's set in like the 1850s and 60s during the Stamp Act, when things were starting to get organized towards a revolution. And they're talking about places in town, in Boston. I'm like, oh, I've been there. I've walked by that. Like, do you just kind of forget about that history in Boston because you're around it so often?
No, I mean, it's the city's great. I mean, that's, you know, when BU was starting a program, you know, I spent my college years here at Merrimack, so I knew the area. It was such a home run. And just, you know, for young kids to come to the city of Boston, it's so quaint. It's so fun. And, you know, I don't lose sight. I mean, you look down the street of our campus, you see the John Hancock Building, you see the Prudential Center. Our kids go downtown all the time. We're very fortunate to be part of such a great city and such a sports city. So, you know, happy to be here, obviously.
You're coming off a nice little stretch. You're 7-3 right now, 4-1 in the Patriot League. You got a bye week, and then you play Yale on Tuesday, next Tuesday, April 9th. It's a game that fans can watch on ESPN Plus. It'll be a good one. 4:00, Yale and BU. It feels like after the Navy loss, something changed and you guys have ramped it up and improved. Yeah. Over Bucknell, Loyola, Army, Holy Cross. What's happened?
Just our seniors played like seniors and led like seniors. That was the biggest thing. We have this great group of fifth years. We have this great group of seniors that have been through the thick and thin of the program, have been through the hardships of COVID and come out on the other side, been part of a championship team, part of a disappointing year last year of having great expectations and falling a little bit short. And the season was up and down, and you just really relied on them and their experience to be the leaders that we needed them to be. And we sat down and had some long meetings and just, you know, they're all wonderful people. And can they lead in their own ways, but we just needed them to be more vocal and say what they were thinking. They all think the right thing. They all prepare in the right ways, but they weren't verbalizing it. So that was the challenge of that week, is to step up and verbalize it, show a presence that they hadn't shown throughout the course of the year. Not because they're afraid, or it's just not their personality. The personality is lead by example. And that's great in most instances, but we needed some more alpha. We needed some more pronounced leadership, and they took the challenge, stepped out of their comfort level, and started doing an amazing job after the Navy game.
That's not easy. You know, I was never good at that when I was in college. You can lead, you can set an example, you can kind of hope that everyone follows you, but the reality is sometimes someone needs to stand up in front of the team, I guess, and get after them. Who are one or two guys that you point to as maybe really turned up the leadership in the last month?
I would say our captains. You know, Thomas Niedringhaus is a great leader. And he's kind of the guy that gets everybody in line. And Louis Perfetto is having just a phenomenal year on the field. But he's a guy who's done everything right for 5 years, but is a lead by example. Like, that's the best way I can describe him. And it's just like, follow Lewis. He's doing everything right. But we needed to hear from Lewis. And I think after Navy, he found his voice and said the things that needed to be said. And Patrick Morrison in the same light. It's just funny. Our captains are some of our quietest guys. They do all the work. They're unbelievable. They don't do anything wrong. They've been model students. They've been model representatives of programs for 4 and 5 years, but they're quiet. They just are very businesslike. They get their job done, and then they move on. But we've asked them to step up, and those three have done a really good job of showed why the team selected them as captain, got out of their comfort level, and have said the things that need to be said.
It's amazing to me, having covered your playoff game when BU played in the NCAA tournament in 2022, that the amount of names that are guys I still recognize, like Louis Perfetto, you mentioned, Vince Dialto, you mentioned, Jake Cates was a member of that group. Is Brendan Kelly a new face? I didn't recognize his name.
Yeah, Brendan was a transfer from Penn State. So Brendan transferred after his freshman year. Played a little bit on our second line last year, and then we had to replace Timmy Lay. So Brendan's been a really nice complement to Perfetto and Dialto. You know, those guys do everything, and Brendan's been able to play off ball and score a lot of goals for us.
What's your gut about the Patriot League? It seems like it's highly contested this year. You have dates remaining with Lafayette, Lehigh, Colgate. Last night, Lehigh gave Princeton everything they could handle. In fact, leading that game, in the second
I
half.
know.
Colgate's has moments. Obviously, their win over Penn State. They've had moments. They're tough to prepare for, it looks like now with the way they're riding and playing
Yep.
defense. How would you like broad brush the league?
I would say it's as competitive as it's ever been. Teams are gonna, you're gonna see surprises every weekend. And if you don't play your best game, if you don't prepare right, or you overlook someone, you're gonna end up on the wrong side of the win-loss column. So, Army is a tremendous team. They continue to assert themselves as one of the best teams in the country. We had to play our best game in order to beat them, and very happy that we were able to do that and have a nice stretch. But we're going to be, we're focused on Yale, and then we have to quickly turn our attention to Lafayette. So I really think it's anybody's conference. The next 4 weeks are going to tell the tale of who's going to assert themselves. But at the end of the day, anybody can beat anybody, and it's going to be really interesting.
Is the format of the tournament, the league tournament, the same this year? 1 and 2 get byes and the
Yes.
quarterfinal. Where who's
Yep.
hosting?
The winner of the conference.
The winner. Okay.
So,
So
yeah, so.
grabs.
Yep.
You're in an advantageous spot
Yeah.
having the head to head, but what's the next tiebreaker going to be after that?
So we hold our own destiny as far as the bye goes. In reality, Navy holds holds their own destiny. If they can win out, since they beat us, they would be the number one seed. But we have our own destiny, hold our own destiny as far as we win out. We would get a bye, guarantee that. But we're just worried about Lafayette, in conference, and everything will take care of itself. It goes head to head, and then the tiebreaker sheet is a full page, and you just go down it. So I'm sure it will all work itself out.
Yeah, you get the weekend off. You play Yale, as I said, on Tuesday. It's going to be good. I'll be watching that game, ESPN Plus against Yale Tuesday at 4. A lot going on in Boston right now. The BU hockey team's playing in the Frozen Four, which is
Yep.
a week from Thursday in Minneapolis against DU. I mean, you talk about two classic powers. Is there a vibe? Do you feel that on campus?
Oh, it's unbelievable. The hockey team with the maybe the arguably the best player in hockey with Macklin, and just the school gets so much energy from the hockey program, and certainly was a big reason that I came to BU, was just how much they support the hockey program. And we're trying to get our program to that level where we're nationally competitive each and every year. And I think we're a couple steps away, but we're very happy with the foundation that we built. But you absolutely feel it. And certainly it's going to be an exciting Final Four with, the blue bloods in there with BC and Michigan on the other side. So I know everybody's really excited about, next weekend.
Yeah, those are headline programs in college hockey. Then the week halfway through the month, you got the marathon, like running
I
right through your
know.
practice, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's gonna be awesome. Gonna be awesome.
Does school shut down that day, or
Yeah, they give the day off. Yeah. So
day off? Wow, yeah.
yeah, it's big enough at BU that they give the whole day off. It literally runs right
Right down,
through our
right
right
down.
Comm.
Yeah. Oh, that's fascinating. But you won't give your guys the day off. You make them go
We'll
out there and network.
practice in the morning, and then we play Lehigh the following week, or the following Saturday. So we got to get prepared, but the guys will go out, and they'll enjoy themselves in the afternoon. And it's just a staple of what you do in Boston on Marathon Monday.
Tell me about the cause turnovers. You guys right now, again, leading the country in cause turnovers. It's been a signature of your program. When you break those down, what does the allotment look like? Is it a 25% in riding? Is it 75% in close D? Like, is there anything that jumps out in terms of how a team can ramp up their cause turnovers? Are there maybe some hidden areas that would surprise?
Well, I would say it's probably a third in our ride. I mean, Coach Lippo has done a phenomenal job with our 10 man and getting people in places to make plays across the field. I mean, I think if you look at our attack, they're not going to lead the country in cost turnovers, but they'll each have one or two. And then Will Barnes, our goalie, has a couple cost turnovers because he's making plays in the 10 man. And it just gives our guys opportunities to make plays. And it's an exciting brand of lacrosse. And certainly we're not thudding as much as we slid with Coach Lattimore, but Coach Rowlett has continued our aggressive style of defense. And we have playmakers on defense. We got Roy Meyer, who's certainly first team All-American because of his playmaking ability. Patrick Marston has a great sit. We have Trey Brown, who did a great job on Brendan O'Neill the other day, and Dane DeGoller, who just makes plays. So we have guys that have great stick skills. It's something in the way we recruit. We stress all the time about, we call it a kill. So killing a possession, you can't get a cost turnover if you can't pick up a ground ball. So, it's just as much as a focus to us is when we get the ball on the ground is we got to pick it up. That's a stat that we're really concerned about, and our team does a great job, and Coach Rowlett really does a nice job drilling that and making sure we can kill those possessions and get those cost turnovers when they're available.
Defenders who can end possessions. You say it, and it's amazing. Like, I think sometimes we get fascinated with the big, tall defenders who can cover and block passes and look great, and then they can't get the ball off the ground. Like, being a former goalie, it's like, give me three guys who can get the ball off the ground. I think we're going to win the game.
Correct.
Do you and statting that at all your events that you go to
Oh my
recruiting wise?
God, yeah. Yeah, and I'm a sucker for a defenseman with a good stick, and we feel we can teach you to guard, we teach you, we can slide. If you can't pick up, maybe you're not the best cover guy, we feel we can support you. But if you can't get the ball off the ground, or you can't be in a passing lane where you can deflect a pass, like, it's just hard for me to get behind you as a defenseman. So that's the first thing that always jumps out at me at a recruiting event is, what is your stick? Can you make those plays? Can you, we would call it hockey hands. We got a lot of guys on our team that have played hockey sometime in their career, where can you just get that ball off the ground in a moment, so that we can end a possession? Because it's hard to stop people as the offenses get better and the schemes and the coaches are so adept at attacking your weakness. You get an opportunity to get the ball on the ground. If you can't end it, it's demoralizing. So we really look for that. And if you look at our rotation, the five guys that play for us in our first sub, I mean, all of those guys are elite at killing possessions.
I watched your Duke game yesterday. I'm preparing for Duke hosting Notre Dame on Sunday. Kark and Anish and I all be there on site in Durham. So I plug in your game, and obviously the mud jumps out at you. And I think a lot of folks are like, "Whoa, look at how muddy it is." I'm like, "Well, back in the old day before plastic fields,
Right.
like, mud was
Yeah.
pretty common.
Yeah.
This
Yeah,
time,
exactly.
if it wasn't muddy, it was like a big deal." But I thought it was interesting. The announcer kept calling your defense a zone, and I'm like, "Well, I'm not sure it's a zone. It looks like a zone." They wrote so, and you think about football coverage. It's like when they talk about match zones, how it's a zone until somebody comes in your area, then it's man.
Yeah.
And I get the sense that that's kind of how you guys look at it. How would you describe in basic terms? I don't want to give away secrets, but the way you guys
Yeah.
play.
I would say it's a zone when an opponent is dodging. We're certainly going to support the ball when we need to, and then we're going to have someone that is responsible for supporting the ball. And if he decides that he's going to slide, or he decides that he's going to be in a position where he can't cover his man, we're zone behind him, and we have to share responsibilities to cover guys. And because we're one less when we commit someone to potentially could support the ball. I mean, that's the best way to describe it from my standpoint. So there are a ton of zone concepts. My background's in basketball, so that how my brain works, and just sharing players when off ball is super important to our defense.
You guys competed in that game.
Yeah, we did. We
You end up losing by a
really.
goal, but man, you guys fought, and like you could have played that game for 2 more hours, and I think it would have been a 1-goal game. Like they were not going anywhere, and you guys were going to continue to come after them. I was impressed.
Yeah, I give our kids a ton of credit. We've been in games like that, the Navy game where the third quarter starts and we, for whatever reason, we don't get off to a great start and Duke stretch a lead to three. And when you're going against a defending runner up with all the talent they have, sometimes those games gets away from you. And our guys buckled down, made some plays down the stretch, and really showed me our growth that when the game started to slip away, we said, no, we're not, this game's not getting away from us. And we made some plays, got some stops, scored some goals, and really had every opportunity to win that game. And at the end of the day, Duke just made one or two more plays down the stretch and got the victory.
Did you happen to watch any of the Syracuse Cornell game last night?
Just the overtime,
Okay.
and I was working. I was actually at the Lehigh game on. I had both games on, but I was listening to the Lehigh game, and
Yeah.
then I just saw the 1 and 3 minute penalty. I'm like, what is going on? So,
I was going to ask you, like, I've been around the game a long time. I can't remember, even as a coach and a high school level, I can't remember anyone ever getting ejected.
no, not in live ball.
Yeah, I don't remember in college, high school, or even club when people would go after officials pretty good.
Yeah.
But I just don't recall that happening.
Yeah.
But that game was bizarro land. I mean,
Yeah. Yes. Well, Cornell was down and they cut back and then Syracuse stretches it again. So a ton of credit to Cornell for sticking in there and making plays when they needed to. I mean, both teams are excellent. I've seen
yeah.
both the teams a bunch. I think they'll both be there, final 8 weekend, but credit to Cornell for anytime you're down 7-0, that game can get away from you, and then down, it takes so much energy to get
6. Yeah.
back.
13-6. They're down 16-10.
I know, so I think a lot of times you exert so much energy to get back that it's hard to climb all the way. So a ton of credit to those guys.
You know what I'm seeing? It seems like every team's got goodness. Every team's got some
Yeah.
great, but to get 60 minutes right now, I've only seen Notre Dame really put together a great 60 minutes against Michigan. Everybody else has been a half, it's been a quarter. And like if they could bottle that and extend it for 60, they could be contenders for championships. Like how do you
Yeah.
try to get that? You know what, how we can be our best. You've seen it. How do you just
Yep.
extend that?
Well, I'm going to comment first on your first comment, and then I'll get back to your 60 minutes. But the parity is unbelievable. And we say that every year, but I don't know if we really, really mean it. There's always this group of four teams that are not untouchable, but one team would have to play their best game, and maybe one of those four teams not play a good game. And I'm not sure that's the case this year. You just look at the Harvard Virginia game, and there's been other results where teams are going with these top four teams, us and Duke, and maybe whatever. You just kind of see those games where you're not sure what's going to happen, but the parity is, I feel there's a lot of really good teams. All the fifth years have made a difference. There's a lot of experience on a lot of different teams that have been in these really competitive games over a long course of time. But 60 minutes is key, is can you figure out a way to just be great from the first whistle through first quarter and handle the ups and downs? And in our case, can we continue to ride at a high level and execute? Because when we don't ride well, we give up really strong scoring opportunities. And can we not have those mental blocks where we screw something up and give up a great scoring opportunity? Can we face off at a high level? I mean, it's everything. It's like, can we clear the ball? We struggled in clearing, and we've been able over the last 3 weeks to clear the ball to give our offense maximum opportunities to do well. So it's everything, Quint. And that's what we always preach is, hey, can we compete for 60 minutes and execute? If we do those two things, we're going to be in every single game and give ourselves a chance to win.
Yeah, it's amazing. Last night's game, face-offs, goaltending, penalties, turnovers, shot selection,
Right.
just an incredible amount of lit. Like if you're firing on your, like you're doing all those things well, which is probably pretty hard when you're facing
Sure.
an opponent who's capable. Last thing about that game last night, it's the second time this year that I've watched a game. The first was the Hopkins Denver game, where like game management issues were
Yep.
to me, like, and in football, like you got analytics. You got coaches who meet for hours about, okay, what are we going to do when we get to the red zone? And are we going to go slow here? Are we going to play for the field goal? We're going to kick the touch, go for the touchdown. Like, how does that exist in your world? Like, what things are you discussing?
Overtime management and end of the game management, even end of the quarter management is something that we discuss ad nauseum as a staff. And a lot comes into how we're facing off, what that looks like. But if you think about the overtime period as a 4-minute block, it's basically three possessions. And if you can win the first faceoff and you think you're going to win the next faceoff, you know, if you don't score the first time and you can stop your opponent, are you better served to just take the last shot and hope you can win the next one to basically get two possessions before they get one? So that kind of goes, but then your offense coordinator saying to you, well, I don't want to go at 20 seconds because that might not be enough time to get a good shot. Give me 40. So it goes back and forth with these discussions over, you know, what to do with it. The offense coordinator is saying, I would really prefer 40 seconds to go because I think I'm going to get a better shot. And I'm saying, well, can you get a good shot in 20 so the ball doesn't come back at us? Because I think we can win the next faceoff and then I'll give you a full 80. So those conversations go back and forth. And at the end of the day, you know, it's a feel thing, but you got to be thinking about them. You certainly got to be thinking about them.
And there was a scenario in both those games, again, that not only do we have what you just talked about, but there was a man up or man down scenario going on along with that. So,
right. Sure.
Or there was a situation last night where we're even shot clock, but in 39 seconds, we're going to have a man up for the, but it's only a 20 second man up. Do we go 5-on-5 here or do we hold and go 6-on-5? They ended up going, with the 6-on-5 and didn't leave themselves enough time to get a quality shot. And then you're kind of like, right. Well, so they didn't lose the scenario, but they didn't exactly win it. But it just hit me as to, wow, there's more here that I think than people are talking about now with shot clock, with unreleasable penalties, things like that.
Did you see the Towson Loyola game? Did you happen to catch that game?
I watched parts of that game, the overtime. I saw the game winner.
So I haven't talked to Coach Nadelin about this, but I'm assuming they were trying to take the last shot. So they go to goal with about 10 seconds, which is probably the time that you need to go. And the shot hits a defender and rolls out. And everything that you're trying to avoid, by happenstance, you can't avoid it. You know, so sometimes you're trying to do everything right, and Loyola gets a fast break and scores with zero time left. So you're like damned if you do, damned if you don't sometimes. But, you know, the best you can do is prepare for it, practice it, you know, communicate to your guys what you're thinking, have conversations with your staff so you're all on the same page. So at the end of the day, you do what you think is best, and you have a reason behind it. I think that's the most important thing.
So situational being score tied, we're down by a goal, we're up by a goal, up by one or two goals. Like you're playing a lot of that stuff in your scrimmage portions or your half field portions?
We do a lot of that in the fall. We'll have probably in November, we'll do one situation a day where, okay, this team is up a goal and there's 15 seconds to go, or, hey, there's a minute left. We got to get a stop. Then we got to clear it. Then we got to call a timeout. So we're doing one of those, you know, we call situational scrimmages, or we'll say you're down three goals and they're 4 minutes to go. Let's start chipping away. Or what do we got to do? We got to slide a little bit faster. We got to take some chances. Obviously our 10 man is in place. Do we double the ball on the end line? You know, we'll call timeout as coaches in order to work on those things. So, you know, and there's always a scenario. I mean, probably once every third game, we see a scenario that we just haven't prepared for because something weird happens and you have to adjust for it. And then we got to practice it. So there's just so many scenarios in the game of lacrosse.
You were a former assistant at Yale. They come to town next week. You, from all indications, you have a extremely strong relationship with Andy still. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Yes, very accurate.
Former head coach at Merrimack. You mentioned your basketball background, but you coach women's lacrosse. And that's really why I wanted to get you on this podcast, because I've been helping out my daughter's team. tell me something that I need to know. Where I'm about a month into this thing.
My favorite part about coaching the girls, I coached Andover High School for 3 years. It was my first job out of college. And the the best thing about coaching girls was they were such great listeners. Like yeah. they wanted to please you. They wanted to, you know, they trusted you. They wanted to do exactly what you were saying. And they really cared. I really enjoyed my 3 years. I felt, you know, sometimes boys always want to know why. Why are we doing this? Why are we, you know, I think I got a better idea, or I think, you know, this might work. Where girls, you know, it was like, okay, coach, this is it. We're going to try it. And they, at times they did it great. Sometimes we needed to work on it, but there was really this commitment and trust in the coach. And there was, I was fortunate to start a brand new program. We had some great athletes and we could try some different things. And I was, you know, I didn't know the rules. So I was learning as I was going, and they were great at helping me through. There was no judgment that I didn't know the rules. Like if I screwed something up, like the shooting space thing is, you know, you got to get used to that, because I would be like, okay, slide here. And they're like, well, we can't do that because that shooting space. So then you have to figure it out and you work together. But, I just really enjoyed, you know, how coachable they were and how committed they were to getting better was probably the biggest thing I could give you as a takeaway.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that. You know, that wanting to please, the trust, a real steady, maybe a more steady emotional than the high school boys that I've coached in the past who seem to maybe ride a steeper roller coaster, so to speak.
Sure.
With the good times and the bad times.
I would agree with that. But we also had our times that, you know, the girls, they want to win as much as the boys. So, you know, and sometimes they let the emotion get to them just as the boys do. So we had some roller coasters for sure.
A last thing, coach, how do you fill this week with a bye week? Obviously you're back time Tuesday, back day as if it were a Saturday. Do you give the guys a day or two off? Do you focus more on rehab? Weightlifting, you do extra conditioning? Like how do you approach? There's a bunch of teams. Like Syracuse only has two games in the month. Duke's got a light schedule this month, but you guys, just this is just a one off.
Yeah, this was a one off. We would have preferred to play the weekend, but it's, you know, Patriot League is one of the few conferences that has odd number of teams. So if you can't, you know, can't get the game, it's us in the Ivy League. And if a team doesn't want to play, a team doesn't, you know, so you're very limited in the amount of games. So what we did, we took Monday off. We practiced Tuesday. We went hard yesterday and competed. And we worked on some things that, you know, we needed to get better. So yesterday was completely about us. We'll take today off and then we'll start our 5-day prep. You know, you know, we'll basically treat Thursday like a Monday, you know, as we get prepared for Yale. And then we got a quick turnaround with Lafayette on Saturday. So don't want to go too hard just because, you know, we're getting to that part of the season where being fresh is as important as anything.
Yeah. You mentioned taking care of us. That's been an issue. The team I'm coaching, I think sometimes we're looking at the opponent a little too much as opposed to, Hey, we got to, when we can, we've got to develop our skills. We got to get better. Like these girls want to play college. They got to get better. And it really basic stuff. Like when I hear from Gary Gate telling me last week, when we have our off time, we're going to go back and do fundamentals. Like, okay, that's Syracuse doing fundamentals. So high school teams, it's so important when you have those days that aren't butted up to a game, when you're not talking scouting and schemes, like just a hammer, like you're constantly teaching fundamentals, shooting, dodging, one-on-one defense. Like if you can't do that stuff, then none of the schemes really matter, right?
And that is, you know, what I've learned over the years, and some assistant coaches have been great because I have a football background and it's so like, let's watch as much film as we can and let's know everything about our opponent. And sometimes, you know, you paralyze yourself with too much information. So, you know, we've done a really good job here at BU of just being, you know, having our schedule. So Monday and Tuesday is always about BU and what do we got to get better at and what can we work on? You know, Coach Lippo does an amazing job with our offense. And, you know, I think we're one of the more skilled teams in the country offensively, just because we spend so much time on skills and stick work and shooting and dodging and footwork and all those things. And same thing on the defensive end and same thing at the faceoff X, where we are consistently, you know, there won't be a practice, you know, over the course of the year that we don't spend 30 minutes positionally, where you're with your position coach. I'm with the goalies. Coach Moreland's with the faceoff, and Rowe and Slips have the offense and defense. And we're working on things that are, you know, slide recovery and how do we stand and how do we slide and how do we recover? And these basic things that you do week one, but you got to keep getting better at them and keep doing them right, or it's hard to compete. So it's hard because I want to start thinking about Yale, and obviously they have a great offense, and you want to, all right, how are we going to stop Brando? And, you know, certainly the way that they play transition offense, you want to start digging into that and making your team aware of it, and how are we going to, you know, combat that. But, you know, if you can't do the simple things and you can't be the best version of yourself, then, yeah, then you have no shot.
And especially, I mean, you think about player development for your freshmen and your sophomores, like those sessions are just getting them better, yeah, getting better. And then when you do install a game plan, whether it's for Army, their no slide defense, or for, yeah, Yale and their 10 man, like you got a chance, but without those basic skills, right? It's you're hoping.
Well, you hope that you paint a broad brush that you're developing skills that can go against anything. You know, you're working on dodging skills throughout the course of the year when you do play an Army and they're not going to slide. And then you're working on stick skills when you play a Colgate or a team that's going to slide like crazy and you have to beat them with stick work. And then you're kind of working on your offense so that you're in the right spot, so you have field balance and you have the right option. So all of it kind of comes, and same thing on defense, you're working on, you know, one-on-one defense. So, you know, if you think you can win your matchups and not slide as much, you're working on slide recovery when you have to slide a team. So it's a really broad framework of skill set, but, and then you tweak it for each individual opponent, as I'm sure makes sense.
Coach Poley's got BU 7-3 overall, 4-1 in the Patriot League. On a little bit of a heater in the league, beating Loyola and Army. Look forward to watching your Yale game next Tuesday on ESPN Plus, which is just like the greatest thing ever for me.
Oh, it's awesome. It's awesome. It's such a, everybody can watch, and it's
TV
good.
Shows you watch. I'm like, in the spring, I don't watch any TV. I watch a lot of lacrosse at night.
Yeah, it's awesome. I'm so glad that they created that platform, and our guys do an amazing job here at BU. And the majority of the places do. They take it serious. It's professional. It's well done, and it feels like a professional game.
Yes. Well, thanks for the time today, Coach.
Of course.
Good luck with the Frozen Four. Good luck with the marathon. Yep. Good luck with your chase for the Patriot League title.
Awesome. Thanks, Quint. Appreciate you having me.
Thank you for tuning into today's show. You can contact me at quint.kesnick@espn.com with any feedback or guest ideas. And a special thank you to all our sponsors, including today's presenting sponsor, Spire Lacrosse.